in the sports world on a Tuesday? I'm pretty fired up today, I have to say. There's a lot to get to on tonight's program. JT, you're already looking at me funny over there. I think you know why I'm fired up.
Yeah, it's because Russell Wilson, right?
Sure, sure. It's got everything to do with the Russell Wilson news. No, it's got a lot to do with what is going on with my Iowa Hawkeyes and mainly their men's basketball program and an interesting connection that I have. But we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. After hours here on this Tuesday night, Logan Weber alongside my producer for this evening's program, JT Noah, with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Our number is 913-586-7965. We don't have any guests lined up for the next 3 hours, so it is just myself, JT, and you guys. So feel free to text in, call in, talk about whatever you want to hear talked about on the program here tonight. There's a lot for us to get to. Of course, the Royals spring training season came to a close tonight as they get set for opening day on Thursday. We'll spend a great deal of time tonight talking about the Royals, the latest news with them, what took place today, and what it means for the start of the season, and kind of go through some preseason predictions, I guess, so to speak, about what we think is going to come out of this Major League Baseball season. Who are the contenders? Who's going to end up in the World Series? Who's going to win the World Series? Is this the year that Bobby Witt Jr. usurps Aaron Judge and takes home the American League MVP? We will kind of predict some of those things as we go along the show tonight. But let's open things up with the breaking news that we just saw out of the National Football League, and that is that Russell Wilson is now a New York Giant. In the latest string of quarterback moves involving the city of New York that nobody quite understands, Russell Wilson to the Giants. He signed a one-year deal today, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, worth an estimated $21 million, including $10.5 million guaranteed with this deal. He had been in discussions with the New York Giants, along with Cleveland and Pittsburgh, but is opting to go to New York, where he will now presumably compete with Jameis Winston for the starting quarterback job. Now, if history is any indication, Jameis Winston has been a backup quarterback in the NFL for the past 3 or 4 years, and Russell Wilson has consistently been a starter everywhere that he's been. So I think it's fair to say that the presumption is Russell Wilson is coming in to be the Giants' starting quarterback, and Jameis Winston will now be the Giants' backup quarterback. I think it's also fair to say that regardless of what happens with the quarterback situation in this draft, I don't believe the New York Giants, even if Shedeur Sanders was there at number 4, they will be taking Shedeur Sanders. And maybe, and I saw somebody in the text line just before the show started mention this, maybe the Giants believe that Shedeur Sanders won't be there at number 4, and that's why they were so gung-ho about getting a deal done with Russell Wilson to give them 2 quarterbacks on the roster now when they really didn't have any last year. No offense to Daniel Jones, Tommy DeVito, or to Drew Locke, but I don't understand this. I really can't wrap my head around it. Somebody in the text line in 816 just said, Russell Wilson is just going to throw it up to Malik Nabers like he did to George Pickens. And you're right. But I think if there's anybody who is the most upset about this deal being had, it is Malik Nabers. Because I feel like Malik Nabers just knew if Jameis Winston was going to be his starting quarterback, he was going to get at minimum 12 to 15 targets a game. Like, Malik Nabers was walking out of the 2025-26 season with 200 targets, probably 130-plus catches, 2,000-plus yards, and like 4 touchdowns. Because other than him, the Giants have no offense.
I mean, you're not wrong. But I don't know how Shedeur would be going before 3, because the Giants pick number 3. And so, do we think Tennessee and Cleveland both take a quarterback? I think Tennessee doesn't take a quarterback, but that's just my opinion. I think this is so funny because you didn't have any quarterbacks last year, but let's bring in 2 quarterbacks that are, I would say, average at best when they're playing well. But like you said, Malik's so upset right now. He's like, are you kidding me? I was going to have so many targets this year. Fantasy galore. Fantasy owners are upset too. They're like, all right, Malik, we're dropping you down our list now of wide receivers we want to take.
Yeah, that was my fault. I thought the Giants picked 4 and the Patriots picked 3, but I had them flipped in my head. So the Giants still pick at number 3.
Remember, the Bills decided to help out.
Right. Yeah. And for the Giants, this picking at 3... The presumption is, and this is the latest news that we are getting, is that the Tennessee Titans are very, very impressed with Cam Ward, especially after what he did in his pro day earlier this week. So they are not only more open to drafting Cam Ward, the price for the number one overall pick in terms of trade value has risen for the Tennessee Titans as well. So will there be a team willing to meet the demands that Tennessee has put forward? I think it's unlikely. And if that's the case, Tennessee obviously knows they need a quarterback. I have been incredibly impressed with Cam Ward throughout his career thus far. Incredibly accurate. He makes great decisions with the football. He's an excellent athlete. He doesn't wow you with his arm strength, but I think he's a guy who could be a very, very serviceable quarterback in the National Football League for a long time. The question is, do you want just serviceable with a quarterback you take first overall? That's not the expectation when you take a guy 1-1 in the NFL draft. You're expecting that guy to be a generational sort of talent. You're expecting Joe Burrow when he was taken first overall by the Bengals. You're expecting Myles Garrett when he was taken first overall by the Cleveland Browns, right? That's what you expect out of the first overall pick in a draft. But you look at where Tennessee sits in a division that includes the Indianapolis Colts, who are down in the dumps and seemingly have no answers at their quarterback position. You've got the Houston Texans, who have a young star quarterback in CJ Stroud. They've got a lot of young pieces on the offensive and defensive side of the football, but there's still some bumps in the road for that team. I think coaching, leadership, and ownership of mistakes is a problem with the Houston Texans. They just like to deflect blame on other people or, you know, guys wearing stripes during a football game and not just say, oh yeah, we didn't play well enough to win. So, you know, I think that the AFC South is a division where if you hit on a quarterback, it could drastically change the overall implications of your team. They've got a first-year general manager, of course, who came over from Kansas City and worked with Brett Veach in the front office. So maybe he's looking at it from the standpoint of, it's my first year, it's the quarterback's first year, we're going to have a first, you know, we're going to put all this stuff's coming together at the same time, and we're going to build this quote-unquote culture together. So I don't know. And if you're the New York Giants and you're thinking, okay, Cam Ward's going to go one. Maybe the Giants, either they don't think Shadur will be there at three, or maybe they don't think Shadur is good enough for them to pick up at three. Because if you think about from the Titans' perspective, Titans take Cam Ward at one. And even if they don't, if they trade with somebody, whoever trades up to number one is going to take Cam Ward. Or if he falls somehow, say the Titans just stick it at 1-1 and they take Abdul Carter, who I believe is the best player in this draft. The Browns would likely select Cam Ward second overall. So if you're the New York Giants, at worst, you're walking away with Travis Hunter with the third overall pick.
Or do you trade it back?
And they might, but I know that they have been very, very impressed with Travis Hunter throughout this process. They are one of those teams who truly believe that Travis Hunter can be a two-way player in the National Football League. They think he's a guy who can play corner and wide receiver on a consistent basis. I don't necessarily share that belief. I think he can be a number one cover corner in the National Football League. He's that talented, and I think he can play sparingly on defense or on offense. I don't think he's a guy that plays more than 20 snaps a game offensively. He's not going to play 60 snaps on defense and turn around and play 60 snaps on offense. Over the course of a 17-game regular season, I just don't see it. If the Giants do, they might be willing to take him at number three. The Giants have done some strange things in recent years. Most notably, let's say paying Sterling Shepard a third time and paying Daniel Jones $40 million a year instead of paying Saquon Barkley.
I was going to say letting Saquon alive. Also, I love what Darius Slayton said, the wide receiver for the Giants.
Yeah, Darius Slayton is another one.
Yeah, Giants country, let's ride.
Ew. Giants country, let's stomp. Like, what?
Giants country, let's blue.
What's he going to make up here?
I know.
Yeah, that's
a fascinating
one.
I told you out in the bullpen, you got Russ cooking, and you got Jameis eating those W's.
Ew.
It's so bad.
It's horrendous. Speaking of head-scratching moves, somebody in the text line just mentioned this, and I see it here from Adam Schefter as well. Stephon Diggs is going to the New England Patriots.
$69 million.
3 years, wow. $69 million.
Ooh-wee.
Yeah, I can understand why he's going to New England based off of that price tag. Hey,
get
good
Mac,
Lord.
Get Mac a weapon, I guess. Man. Wow.
I guess.
They really wanted DK, but they're settling with Stephon Diggs. I saw people saying, oh, Diggs could go to Buffalo. I was like, there's no way he's going back to Buffalo.
No.
There's no way.
I think he burned way too many bridges there. But he's going back to the AFC East to go up against the Bills' arguably biggest rival in the division, the New England Patriots. He's coming off of statistically the worst year of his NFL career with 47 catches for 496 yards and 3 touchdowns. Now, he only played in 8 games because of injury concerns, but he's now 32 years old, or at least will be 32 years old during the course of next season. Now, if this would have been last year, if he would have signed for 3 years, $69 million with New England instead of the 1 year deal he signed with Houston, it makes a little bit more sense because he was coming off of 4 consecutive 100 catch seasons or better. But I'm not kidding you when I say that he had career lows in games played, targets, catches, yards, yards per reception, and touchdowns, which was at 3, which is tied for his second year in Minnesota for the lowest of his career. His previous low for receptions was 40 or 52. His previous low for yards in a season, 720. And those were both in his rookie season. I can't say that I completely understand $23 million a year from the New England Patriots, but I agree with what you're saying a little bit of the Patriots were desperate for a number one wide receiver for Drake May. And I know they were very, very interested in T. Higgins. And of course, he gets put on the franchise tag. They were very interested in DK Metcalf, but the Steelers had a better trade package, it appears. So, man, I don't get it. I don't get the amount of money that they're shelling out for Stephon Diggs, but to each their own, I suppose. I'm not going to get in the way of somebody making a bad decision, right?
Especially if it's not the Chiefs, right?
Exactly. Somebody in the division, right? Somebody within the AFC, not the division, but within the AFC. Not that the Patriots are any concern for the Kansas City Chiefs right now. Again, 913-586-7965 is our number. A 660 just asked, didn't he tear his ACL? Yes, he tore his ACL in like either the 8th or the 9th game of the year for the Houston Texans. Now, they're saying that he's like ahead of schedule with his ACL surgery. So typically it's like a 6 to 8 month thing, and he did it about 5 months ago, so he should be ready to go by the time they reach training camp. Why would you do a 3 year if the Texans only gave him one? Did he have the leverage because they have no wide receiver? That would be my assumption, right? The camp of Stephon Diggs recognizing that, as I said, New England was very interested in T. Higgins. He gets put on the franchise tag, signs that long-term extension with Cincinnati. They wanted DK Metcalf. Well, they miss, and he goes to the Pittsburgh Steelers. There are no other massive name wide receivers on the market right now. I mean, there's not even a DeAndre Hopkins or a Hollywood Brown on the market right now. And so Stephon Diggs knew that the Patriots were desperate for a wide receiver and that he had all the leverage in that situation. So, yes, I believe that that had everything to do with the amount of money and the length of the deal that he is getting is because the Patriots really want to see what they have in Drake May. And in order to do that, you've got to surround him with some weapons to see what he can manage, because he did some good things last year with questionable weapons. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. And to put into perspective how much of an overpay this could be for the Patriots as we see it, his average per year is $23 million, which succeeds Chris Godwin and Davante Adams signing. He's making more per year than Adams and Godwin, and they all three have signed this year.
Yeah, he's younger than Davante Adams, I believe.
Right, but he's also coming off that injury.
Right, and he is coming off of this injury, which is kind of the first big injury of his career, if I'm being, you know, total fairness on either side here, kind of playing devil's advocate. Chris Godwin has a pretty extensive history of injuries throughout his career, and I'm of the belief that Chris Godwin, if he would have allowed his services to reach free agency, I think he could have gotten more money out of it than what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers ultimately paid him, but Chris Godwin showed a level of loyalty to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and a belief in what they've got built with that offensive line and Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans across from him. So there's something to be said for that.
$26 million guaranteed Diggs did on his contract. So, so he got 3 years, $69 million with $26 million guaranteed.
That's a lot of money, man.
Good for his camp. I want to know what his camp was giving out because I need them at my back of my quarter.
His agent finagled a great move, no doubt about it. Somebody else in the text line said, does Russell Wilson signing with the Giants make it almost certain that Aaron Rodgers goes to the Steelers? I think that it increases the likelihood, but I don't think it's certain. I like your use of the phrase almost certain. I would lean probably 75 or 80% towards him going to Pittsburgh. Rodgers still wants to go to Minnesota. According to the reports that I was reading earlier, he said that the Minnesota Vikings are his preferred team. Now, the Vikings don't seem all that interested in bringing Aaron Rodgers in. They have a lot of belief in J.J. McCarthy, which I don't quite understand
either. Well, do they? Because I'm not here to play devil's advocate here, but I came in here earlier with Rob, and on my screen for SportsCenter, it said, developing story, J.J. McCarthy announces that he has not been named the starter for this year.
That's true.
And I'm like, well, I wouldn't think he would be announced right away. He's going to still earn it. He never earned it last year.
Right.
So I think it's funny. I almost want to put up like a poll. Do we see Rodgers signing more likely or him just sitting out the whole year? And just saying, hey, I'm not playing because Minnesota didn't give me what I wanted.
Yeah, or he'll just sit and, you know, continue to work out and continue to do all the things and wait for the inevitable possibility of a contending team that loses their starting quarterback, right? Say he's sitting around week 9, week 10, and Joe Burrow unfortunately goes down with another season-ending injury, which has become somewhat of a habit throughout the course of his NFL career. And now Aaron Rodgers is sitting there lying in wait to jump onto a contending team. I think he could do something like that.
Or
I think
even like the 49ers, like the Brock Purdy. Hey, Brock Purdy goes down. Hey, Aaron, hey, come on down.
Yeah, and again, I thought that was a possibility this summer or this fall, you know, this spring, that he might end up with the San Francisco 49ers until the Niners decided to get rid of so many players on their roster, pretty much telling everybody in the National Football League, okay, they're going to re-sign Brock Purdy, right? The plan is to give Purdy the long-term extension. Otherwise, why are you cutting Kyle Juszczyk, although they brought him back, right? Why are you letting Halanua Hufanga, you know, why are you, or Talanoa Hufanga walk away? Why are you letting Dre Greenlaw walk? Why are you trading Deebo Samuel and all these other things? Why are you letting Charvarius Ward go to Indy? I think that it was because they want to re-sign Brock Purdy for the long haul. So, yes, I would still lean towards Aaron Rodgers going to Pittsburgh, but man, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see where Aaron Rodgers, somebody in the text line says where Aaron Rodgers needs to go is to Shady Acres Retirement Village. I retweet that sentiment. I completely agree. 913.
His dark retreat. He just needs to go to his dark retreat.
Yeah. Just go to your darkness retreat and never come out. Somebody said you're not sitting out a year at 40. If you sit out a year at 40, you're retired. I don't disagree. But I mean, tell that to Joe Flacco.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying what he could do.
Yeah, Joe Flacco did it 2 years ago and won comeback player of the year in that fashion. So,
do you agree with that though? Comeback player of the year?
No, for him that year, absolutely
not. Thank you. Okay. I think it goes to a person that was injured and then comes back and does something.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not sitting on the couch eating popcorn and comes out and does that.
Yeah, I mean, DeMar Hamlin did something pretty incredible.
He did. Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't know how it goes to Joe Flacco, but I digress. 913-586-7965 is our number. Much more to get to here, including getting you guys set for opening day for Royals baseball coming up on Thursday. Royals had their last spring training game this afternoon. We'll tell you about that and what we expect from the Royals as the season gets underway. That's coming up next right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan. Opening up the show tonight with some NFL news. Russell Wilson signing a 1-year deal worth up to $21 million with the New York Giants. And Stephon Diggs signing a 3-year deal worth up to $69 million, $63 million, with the New England Patriots, which is just mind-boggling, I have to say. But I guess stranger things have happened. I don't really understand 3 years, $69 million for a 31-year-old wide receiver fresh off of an ACL tear who was with a new team last year. It was his first year with them, and has this will be, now be his fifth team. This is the fifth team he will have played on in his NFL career. Started with Minnesota, went to Buffalo, or I guess the fourth.
I was about to say, isn't the fourth? Yeah.
This will be the fourth in his career, but still, that's a lot of movement for a 31-year-old wide receiver.
And two of those teams he forced himself out of, in a sense.
Right. He forced himself out of Minnesota and then pretty much forced himself or burned all the bridges for himself in Buffalo. And his relationship with Josh Allen was tedious at best. There was always news about those two to be had. So, yeah, it's a strange situation. And now we all wait for the next big NFL domino to fall, which is, of course, Aaron Rodgers, right? Does he go with Pittsburgh? Does he continue to try to push his way into Minnesota?
You know what his... Okay, you're going to laugh at this, but you know what gives me the thought? His big idea is he's going to try to take all the spotlight and sign right before the first round of the NFL draft. He's going to sign 5 minutes before the very first pick the Tennessee Titans have.
Just wants to take
just
some
take
of
the shine and be like, hey, guess what, guys? I've signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
He's just waiting.
You know how he would be.
He's just waiting for the moment that makes the most sense for him to get the most amount of attention possible. I could see it. I could see it. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Somebody just put on Twitter, Aaron Rodgers realizing that if he doesn't pick a team, the national media will be talking about him every single day. It feels Aaron Rodgers-like. Yeah, the focus for Rodgers is believed to be with the Vikings and the Steelers. But again, the Vikings say that they're not going after Aaron Rodgers.
It's a one-way street right now.
It seems like Rodgers is just, he is being a pick me right now.
He's like that pesky guy that wants to hit on that girl, but the girl does not want you. He's like, come on, give me a shot. Come on.
She's like, absolutely not.
I don't want you.
No, leave me alone.
Would it be Rodgers also to be like, hey, ESPN, like what LeBron James did? Hey, let's have a sit down and I'll give you who I'm going to. Like,
yes.
Hey, attention. Yeah.
A decision. He'll just do his decision on the Pat McAfee show.
Oh, yeah, the Pat McAfee show. Yeah.
It'd just be absolutely like an exclusive with Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show. Ugh, whatever. We did have Royals baseball today. Final spring training game for Kansas City, and it was a 3-1 win against the Texas Rangers. Chris Bubich threw 5 really good innings in this game. He gave up 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk. He struck out 8 in the frame. I think pretty much solidifying himself as the number 5 starter for this Royals team. I don't know if that was very debatable prior to the start today, but after this start today, I think it's pretty much a done deal that Chris Bubich will be that fifth starter. Now, will he be the number 4 or the number 5? That has yet to be seen. I have seen some that have Bubich in the 4 and Michael Lorenzen as the number 5 starter for Kansas City, but he's going to be in this rotation along with, as I said, Michael Lorenzen, and then, of course, the big 3 of Cole Reagan, Seth Lugo, and Michael Wacha. Salvador Perez, 2-for-2 today at the dish with 3 RBIs, including a moonshot of a home run in the 4th inning off of Jacob deGrom. That was a big one. He's had the only run support for the Royals all day long. Bobby Witt Jr. was 0-for-2. Jonathan India was 0-for-2. Michael Massey went 2-for-2. He finished the spring batting .408 as he continues to swing a really hot bat after he was impressive last year. So that could be some fun to see. Darren Blanco was 1-for-2 in the game. So the Royals finish 20-12 in the spring. Another really, really impressive spring training for the Kansas City Royals. And now you look at where this Royals team sits. Their 26-player Major League roster is it exactly that, 26. Earlier today, the Royals optioned Nick Lofton, Joey Weimer, and Drew Waters to minor league, to the minors. They optioned those three. They also reassigned infielder Harold Castro, infielder outfielder Tyler Tolbert, right-handed pitcher Taylor Clark, and catcher Brian O'Keefe. So based off of those roster moves, the Royals currently sit as such. Two catchers with Salvi, of course, and Freddie Fermin. They have five infielders, quote-unquote, with Vinny Pasquantino seemingly playing first. You've got Jonathan India at second, Bobby Witt Jr. playing shortstop, and then Michael Garcia, Michael Massey in somewhat of a combination, playing some second, playing some third, maybe even playing some outfield. They've got three outfielders listed on this Major League club right now: MJ Melendez, Kyle Isbell, and Hunter Renfroe. Darren Blanco made the Major League roster. There was some thought that it might be Nick Prado, considering, you know, he former first-round pick. Royals thought highly of him as a guy who could play some utility. He does have some outfield experience, but it's Blanco that they're going to go with, which I think kind of feeds into Prado potentially being a trade piece at some point this season, with Vinny Pasquantino being only 27 years old, the emergence of Jack Caglione, and Prado being, what, 25, 26 years old now and still wasn't good enough to make the opening day roster for this Royals team.
I think he makes it if they don't make the trade for Mark Cannon. Was it Mark Cannon they made the trade for?
Yeah, Cannon, yeah.
Yeah, I think he makes the roster if they don't make the trade for Mark Cannon, because I think he would have been that utility guy you use.
And he could have been. He very well could have been. You mentioned Mark Canha, who they just traded for from Milwaukee, I want to say.
Yeah, it was
of course,
Milwaukee.
He
yeah.
started his career with the A's, with the Athletics.
Right.
So he is one of those three bench guys, along with Darren Blanco and Kevin Biggio, who put together a really good spring training after the Royals picked him up during the offseason. Is sort of like we'll give him a shot. I mean, he's a former highly touted prospect. He's got a baseball lineage behind him, of course, with that last name, Biggio. And he put together a really good spring, and the Royals seemed to like what they saw. The rotation is as such. Cole Riggins as the ace. He'll be the opening day starter on Thursday against the Brewers. Seth Lugo as the two. Michael Wacha as the three. Presumably, Chris Bubich will be the number four starter. This, at least according to Ann Rogers of MLB.com. And then Michael Lorenzen will be the number five starter.
And you mean opening day against the Guardians.
Guardians. Did I say Brewers?
Yeah.
I was still sort of thinking
Brewers for Bubich. Their opening day for their home opener is Bubich against the Brewers.
Okay. So, interesting.
And there you go.
And then you've got the bullpen of Carlos Estevez, Lucas Ersig, Hunter Harvey, John Schreiber, Chris Stratton, Angel Zerpa, Sam Long, and Daniel Lynch IV. So Lynch did make the Major League roster. He'll be in sort of like a long relief kind of a role. And if he continues to put together good innings, he will kind of put himself in a position where if Bubich or Lorenzen get off to slow starts, maybe he'll be able to slide himself into the rotation, or, God forbid, an injury occurs within that starting pitching rotation, he would presumably be the next man up to leap into a starting pitching role for this Royals team. But I got to say, I love the look of this bullpen. I think yeah. that is the strength of this Royals team this year.
Really?
And I think most people would agree on that. When you look at bringing over Estevez, who was an all-star as a relief pitcher, what Lucas Ersig did for the Royals last year after the deadline, what Hunter Harvey has looked like since coming back from that injury last year, Angel Zerpa, his metrics during spring training have been off the charts. Just brings a ton, just a powerhouse kind of a pitcher, flamethrower. I like what he does. Sam Long and Schreiber provided a lot of good things for the Royals last year, although Schreiber, you know, did struggle at points. Sam Long was pretty nails, pretty consistent all year long.
But I think Schreiber kind of struggled when he would get put into situations where it was back-to-back days and they're like, hey, you got to go feed the fire. You got to, like, take out the fire as much as you can. Here you go. And his stats looked worse than what they probably should have been.
Yeah, with this bullpen has me feeling like a team that these guys could pitch twice a week instead of 3 or 4 times a week, right? The usage for these guys is going to be much, much smaller. And I think that you will obviously have your high leverage situation guys, right? I feel like that a combination of like Harvey Estevez and Ursig, those are kind of like your presumed 7, 8, ninth inning guys in high pressure situations, in those leverage spots to win a game or to pick up a save or a hold. And then you've got the other 5 guys, but it's a situation where if Harvey pitched in the 7th inning on Tuesday and you've got a Wednesday night game and it's another situation, Royals are up 3-1, you can look at Angel Zerpa or Sam Long and be like, yeah, I'm comfortable giving you the ball in the 7th inning here, or the 8th inning here, in interesting spots where, you know, Estevez has already pitched twice this week. I really don't want to throw him into a third pitching performance in a 5-day or a 6-day stretch. Here we go. And I think there's enough faith and there's enough ability with those other guys in this bullpen that it makes this team, this Royals team, is going to be a really, really tough out, I think, in the late innings. It is going to feel like it's not going to be the same. And I would never claim that it will ever be the same, because that was as good of a rotation.
It's
good
the off-brand. You're going to say it's the off-brand kind
of. It was as good a bullpen as you ever saw. But this team feels like it will have a bullpen that you believe in the way that we believed in HDH. Maybe not quite to that level, but close. Yeah, it'll be the great value brand, I guess, so to speak. But what I like about this Royals team, this Royals bullpen, right, with HDH, it was just that. It was HDH. If it was anybody else in the late innings, you were kind of shaking in your boots. I don't feel as confident with any 3 guys on this in this bullpen as I did with HDH, but I feel as confident with the 8 guys they have in this bullpen, presumably, than the 7 or 8 guys they had in the bullpen as a whole in 2015. I think they are collectively top to bottom more talented. It may be just not as top heavy with those top 3 or 4 guys the way that the Royals were of 2013 through 2016.
Yeah, and the big question I have is, I'm intrigued to see what happens when, say, because they put out their 15-day IL with the 3 players that I'm really questioning what they're going to do once they come off the IL is Alec Marsh, Kyle Wright, and James MacArthur. Because those two, at the top, especially Alec Marsh and Kyle Wright, they can be starters.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Are you going to put them back in the minors? You throwing Alec Marsh back in the minors? What are you going to do with MacArthur? Everyone fell in love with MacArthur the first half of the season last year, and then everyone just hated on him. I mean,
he fell off a cliff. Time.
Cody and Gold loved him. We had the infantry, 9th infantry out there, and ever since we had that, he fell off a cliff real hard. It'll be interesting to see how they handle with all these pitching, because they have enough pitchers, you could figure out so much, but some are going to get left off the MLB roster.
Yeah, Kyle Wright is one that continues to fascinate me. He's 28 years old, right? He made his major league debut with the Braves, back in 2018. And he's sort of bounced back and forth, right? He pitched in 4 games as a rookie, didn't start a game. And then in 2019, he started 4 games, pitched in 7, and then he started 8 games in 2020, started only 2 games in 2021, and then he went 21-5 in 2022, right? At 26 years old, he went 21-5 with a 3.19 ERA, struck out 174 batters. And you're like, who the hell is this guy? Finished top 10 in the NL Cy Young voting, and then the next year, started in 7 games, he pitched in only 9, and he had a 6.97 ERA. Didn't pitch for the Royals last year. If he can get back and get healthy, I would love to see that 21-5 guy pitch, right? Will we see it? I don't know. He's the one that I have the most intrigue with. MacArthur, man, I don't know. I don't know if you can push MacArthur back down to the minor league system at this point. I feel like even if you tried, he'd have to clear waivers and somebody would pick him up. I don't know. I think Alec Marsh is a guy that is probably on his way out of the organization. And I don't mean that as anything disparaging against him. I just think that it's a pretty loaded situation he's trying to put himself in the middle of. And he's kind of stuck between 3 obvious starters for this Royals team. You brought back Lorenzen for a reason. You have belief in Bubich and Daniel Lynch. And I believe there's still something to be said for Kyle Wright, because he has at least to some extent proven it in his career. He seems like the odd man out, stuck between those guys and then the Royals prospects, these pitching prospects that they've drafted in the last two or three or four years that are trying to work their way up as well. I think it's going to be fascinating to see. 913-586-7965 is our number. Lance in the text line just said the Royals will win the division and they will make it to the ALCS. That is a very, very confident outlook, Lance, and I hate to be the one to say this, but I don't quite share it. I will expand on that next. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah, your home for Kansas City sports. With spring training over, it's time for predictions and prognostications for Major League Baseball. Where do the Royals end up? What's their overall win-loss record? Where does that seat them within the division? And what does it mean for Major League Baseball as a whole? And we will talk about it, I presume, probably in the 7 o'clock hour here. We've got to get to a break here pretty shortly. But I just... And we'll talk more about the overall, the more all-encompassing aspect of Major League Baseball this year. I'm not as high on this Royals team as a lot of others are. And that's not me saying that I think they're going to revert back to a 60-70 win baseball team, because I think those days are long gone, right? As long as you've got Bobby Witt Jr., you are going to be in a position to compete, right? As long as Seven is sitting there at shortstop, and Cole Reagans is your ace, you're going to be in a good position. Royals won 86 games last year. And I said this last week, right? To go from 56 wins to 86 wins in one season is remarkable. It's only happened like a dozen times in the last 50 years of Major League Baseball that a team has won 30 more games than they did the previous season, year over year. And when you look at what those other teams historically in Major League Baseball did the following season after that 30 plus win improvement over the previous year, only two, I think, of the 12 or 13 other teams outside of the Royals that have accomplished this feat, only two of them improved their record again the next year. And I think that outside of Vinny Pasquantino and Michael Lorenzen, this Royals team got very, very lucky with its overall health throughout the year. I like what the Royals did in the bullpen, but eventually you're going to see regression from Waka and Seth Lugo. Will it be this year? I don't know. It could be next year. It could be the year after that, right? Lugo had the best statistical season of his entire career last year. Waka, however, has kind of been along this trajectory. He's got like three or four straight seasons with a sub 3.5 ERA. He's been very, very good throughout the last couple of seasons before he even got to Kansas City. So maybe less so for him. Seth Lugo wowed people, right? Last year was Cole Reagan's first full year as a starter, and those two guys finished in the top five of the Cy Young voting in the American League. I mean, they were exceptional. How healthy can the Royals' starting pitching rotation stay, right? Bubich has an injury history. Lorenzen has an injury history. Daniel Lynch has an injury history.
They have depth there, though. That's the one key. They do have depth there.
They have depth, but the depth has injury history.
Well,
right?
That's true.
Bubich,
so
and Lorenzen and Wright and Daniel Lynch, right? I mean, you've got all these guys we were just talking about, Alec Marsh. All these guys have had problems staying healthy in the past. So that concerns me a little bit. I love the way this bullpen looks. Absolutely love it. I'm concerned the Royals will not solidify the roles for their guys, right? They have talked about, like, we don't really have express roles for these guys right now. My fear is that they never find it. And then you've got the lineup. Michael Massey put together a remarkable year. Put together a remarkable year last year. Can he continue to do that? Can he be a guy that plays more than 110 or 120 games? Because we know he has that back issue that he's dealt with, and it's going to pretty much keep him from being an everyday starter in this league. Are we finally going to see a jump from Mikel Garcia, Kyle Isbell, and MJ Melendez? Or is this their ceiling? Right? Is this it for these guys? Melendez is going to get his fair share of opportunities, sort of like a prove it situation. Is that going to be a detriment to the Royals if he gets off to a slow start? is Hunter Renfrow your right fielder? He didn't prove it last year. Is this the year he does it as he gets another year into his mid-30s? I don't know. Salvador Perez is a year older, and as much as I love Salvi and as much as I would love to continue to see him play the way he's played, eventually the regression is going to hit for Salvador Perez. And are we going to get a full healthy season out of Vinny Pasquantino? We haven't yet, and he's already, there's questions about him even being ready to go for Thursday with opening day because of that hamstring injury he had over the weekend. So I don't know. Health concerns me with this Royals team. And if the Royals are perfectly healthy all year long, I think they can win 90 games. But I don't think they're going to be perfectly healthy all year long. This feels like a Royals team that will be ballpark right where they were a year ago. 84 to 86 wins, probably second in the AL Central behind the Cleveland Guardians. That's just my feel on it. I'm trying to remove my bias and my Royals fandom from it and look at it objectively, and that's what I see. Royals finishing second in the AL Central behind the Guardians, who win around 90 games. I see the Tigers winning around 84 games. Twins will be a 76 to 80 win baseball team. That's my view on it. And then you've got the Chicago White Sox that'll win, I don't know, maybe they'll win 60 games. Maybe they'll be 50 games. Maybe
you're
they'll be a little bit better.
They're not winning the division?
No. But I don't think...
I just put my slip in for them.
I don't think they will be as historically bad as they were a year ago.
I don't know
ago.
If you can ever do that again.
It would be hard to replicate. It definitely would. 913-586-7965 is our number. I've got some messages in the text line here that I will respond to. When we come back, we're wrapping up hour number one of After Hours with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Logan Weber alongside JT Noah on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you, producer for tonight's show, JT Noah. Our number, 913-586-7965. Talking about the Kansas City Royals, what my expectations for this Royals team are for this year. I just don't think that they're going to be able to stay as healthy as they were a year ago. I see this team going 86 and 76, similar to where they finished last year, somewhere around 84 to 86 wins. If they stay completely healthy, closer to 88 or 90 wins. If we see marked improvements from the outfield, yeah, this is a team that could win 90 plus games, right? If MJ Melendez reverts himself into a 240, 250 hitter, if Kyle Isbell can hit 250, if Hunter Renfrow is a guy that can hit 240 and knock out 20 plus home runs, this Royals team could look differently. I just can't say with a lot of confidence that I anticipate that happening. 913-586-7965 is our number. Somebody in the text line in 816 says, Kyle Isbell had a lot of very good catches last year in center. Just need his bat to come alive and this team will be dangerous. And that's 100% true. Kyle Isbell is an outstanding glove in center field. He brings a tremendous amount of athleticism and anticipation to that center field spot. He's great defensively. His bat leaves a lot to be desired. If he can be a guy, and I'm not asking him to be a dude hitting 270, 280. If he can hit 250, 260, 340, 350 on base percentage, right? Just get on base so that the guys at the top of the order can do what they do best, right? Get it back to the top of the order with India and Bobby Witt and Salvi and Vinny, and this Royals team's going to be in a very, very good spot. I like the addition of Kana. I really do. I'm intrigued by the possibility of Kevin Biggio and what that could mean for this Royals team after he really impressed during the spring. It could be fun. Another 816, and I happen to know who this person is, says, this man knows mid when he sees it. He has to watch the Hawkeyes every year. I recognize the number. It is my childhood best friend. His name's Billy, and he's giving me flack because I'm an Iowa fan. Well, guess what, Billy? My Hawkeyes got better today. They happened to hire a guy who about a week ago beat your beloved Missouri Tigers. I can see it on JT's face. He's upset about it, but I don't care because I'm excited. We're going to talk about that coming up here at the start of the 7 o'clock hour right here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside my producer for this evening's show, JT Noah. We're with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Don't go anywhere. A lot more Major League Baseball news coming up. Some Chiefs news to get to as well. And some more interesting, intriguing college basketball news, as well as the Sweet 16 preview. All that's coming up right here on 96.5 The Fan.